Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Obama has just suffered his greatest political mistake to date. He thought he could force Mubarak out, but Mubarak has said, I'm not stepping down, and he's telling the world to back off. So from my point of view, this is Obama's biggest political mistake to date. Apparently, the Soros-Clinton-Obama media complex has been beaten back by the Saudi Arabian-Israel Old World Order complex. The fact of the matter is, soon the tight jeans in Tahrir Square will be replaced by the headscarves. The blackberries will be replaced by knives. The tanks will roll. The libs will squeal. There'll be candle vigils throughout America in solidarity with their Egyptian, quote, brothers and sisters. And then there'll be a wave of asylum cases, immigrants from Egypt, when their jeans are put back on and their knives are put away. We had a shocking day so far. We saw that we have no intelligence whatsoever in the United States government. The head of the CIA, Leon Panetta, said this morning that there's a strong likelihood Mubarak would step down tonight. We have the head of the Defense National Intelligence, James Clapper, who says that the Muslim Brotherhood is basically largely secular and it's given up violence. This is an astounding statement that the Obama administration had to correct the DNI itself. The head of the Director of National Intelligence today, himself a distinguished Air Force officer, James Clapper, is discussing the Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood, during a hearing on Capitol Hill today. He testifies that the Muslim Brotherhood has pursued social ends and a betterment of the political order and has downplayed its religious underpinnings. He says the term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements. In the case of Egypt, a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decreed al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam, Clapper said. But later, the DNI itself issues a statement going over the head of its director, clarifying this claim. And they say, to clarify Director Claphead's point, in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood makes efforts to work through a political... Anyway, I don't want to read this garbage. Apparently, this DNI Clapper is kind of out of it. It's not the first time he's made a huge mistake. If you remember back in December, alongside other top security officials, so-called, Claphead was stumped when asked about a major set of terror arrests in Great Britain. The White House later acknowledged that Claphead had not yet been briefed about the sweep, while defending him as a consummate DNI. He's a consummate politician. It shows you who Obama has around him. There's no good intelligence anywhere in the Obama administration. They caused Egypt to blow up. They wanted Obama out. George Soros snapped his fingers. Obama put the motions in place. And apparently Mubarak did not bend. What happened here, as I said to you at the beginning of the show, is that Saudi Arabia said, are you out of your minds? Do you idiots have any idea what's going to happen if Mubarak is forced out? If Mubarak is forced out, we're going to have Iran, an Islamist republic. We're going to have Sharia law in a secular nation, and you're not forcing Mubarak out. That's what just happened in one man's opinion, according to one man's opinion. It's a big day, and I have a couple of questions for you. Savage Nation, is this Obama's greatest political mistake to date? What's astonishing to me is that there's no difference between Fox News, CNN, or MSNBC in its coverage of what's going on in Egypt. They're all in the same exact message. They have the same exact message points that the Obama administration is putting out. The same exact messaging on Fox as on MSNBC as on CNN. It's astonishing to me how insulated the news is from reality, because to me that's not reality. They all got it wrong. Every last one of them has it 100% wrong. Of course Mubarak is a dictator. And so what if he's a dictator? He is our dictator. He's a friendly dictator. He's part of the order of the world. If you want him out, that's because you have an idealist view of the world. And you think who is going to replace him? A kind, benevolent Egyptian is going to replace him? You think they're going to have democracy with little old ladies in tennis sneakers at polling booths? You're out of your mind because you don't know reality. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Time to vent. Vent, vent, vent. Mubarak hangs tough. Fact of the matter is, we haven't seen it explode yet. We're all sitting here watching the TV screens. My TV is 20 feet away from me in the studio, so it's kind of fuzzy. All I see is sort of a, it looks like a half-eaten Chicago deep-dish pizza to me, but of course it's the square in Egypt. And thus far, they're still peaceful, but very soon the peace will end. There is no question the Egyptian military is going to take control of this very soon, and they're going to drive them out, and there's going to be peace restored in Egypt. It's going to go back to status quo. And, of course, the libs will scream that this was a great loss for chance for freedom and therefore and so on. They think this is a Selma, Alabama all over again. They have everything through the wrong lens. It's Alice through the looking glass. Every time the left looks at anything, they look at it from the wrong side of the looking glass. Sacramento, Tony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, this Clapper guy is not ignorant. He knows what he's talking about. He was hoping he'll catch us, the American public, sleeping and Googling away. This administration is completely tied to the hip to the Muslim Brotherhood. In every aspect, from the first time Obama went to Egypt, he invited them over 2 years ago. Until now, this thing was...
So you're in the school of thought, and you're not alone, that Obama actually is a more radical Muslim than people fear.
Absolutely. He's a stealth Muslim in Islam. There's something called taqiyya. Everybody go Google it. It's where they lie about it to advance their cause.
Well, if I thought you were the only one saying this, I wouldn't have let you speak on the air. I would have said you're crazy. But I hear this over and over again. Many intelligent people are starting to ask if Obama, not if he's a Muslim, they're sure he is. At the very least, he's a Muslim sympathizer, but he's not even on the right side of the Muslim equation. They fear he's on the wrong side of the Muslim equation. And I think that's what you're saying, isn't that correct?
Absolutely. And I will tell you, Michael, you are doing God's work. Godspeed to you and God bless you. And you are at the tip of the arrow of us.
What's intriguing, I don't want to make this about me, but it's interesting to me that the New World Order banned me from entering Egypt in order to make the radical Muslims banned me from entering England in order to make the radical Muslims who are on the ban list feel better. They picked on me. It's a very interesting thing that really this has been going on for quite a while where they've targeted every voice they can, whether it was Geert Wilders or Michael Savage or anyone else who spoke out against the dangers of radical Islam. They have used the American media and the American government itself to silence us.
You got that right. Right, you hit it right on the nail. And it's amazing to me to see the shills in the media just going along.
Well, the worst part of it is to see the Fox News people repeating the lies of CNN. You would have thought there would have been one person on Fox who got this right. How in the world could we not see what Fox has become?
Yeah, absolutely. O'Reilly dropped the ball on Super Bowl Sunday. He told him, what about the Muslim Brotherhood? He didn't. Obama on national TV in front of the whole America on Super Bowl Sunday didn't deny or chastise the Muslim Brotherhood for what they are. This is amazing. Why can't Americans wake up?
Well, I've awakened. You're awakened. You know what's going on. You know who Geert Wilders is, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that there's some kind of a dramatic backlash in Europe against maybe purging the extremists out of
Europe. There isn't a backlash in Europe. They recognize there's not going to be a Europe left. I'm going to read you a piece of Geert Wilders' speech to the Dutch parliament because it's alarming. This is Geert Wilders' speech to Holland's parliament. He said, Madam Speaker, allow me first to express my sincere thanks to you personally for having planned the debate on Islam on the very day of my birthday. I could not have wished for a nicer present, he said. Madam Speaker, approximately 1,400 years ago, war was declared on us by an ideology of hate and violence, which arose at the time and was proclaimed by a barbarian from England for saying this. Well, I'll go on. He said, Madam Speaker, let me start with the foundation of the Islamic faith, the Quran. This is Geert Wilders now. He said, the Quran's core theme is about the duty of all Muslims to fight non-Muslims. He says an Islamic Mein Kampf in which fight means war, jihad. He says the Quran is above all a book of war, quote, a call to butcher non-Muslims. And he quotes the surahs in the Quran. to roast them, and he quotes the surahs in the Quran, and to cause bloodbaths amongst them, and he quotes chapter and verse in the Quran. He then says, in the Quran, Jews are compared to monkeys and pigs. And by the way, in England, schools for Muslim children have been caught teaching to kill Christians and that Jews are compared to monkeys and pigs. And he says, while people who believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God must, according to the Quran, be fought. And again, chapter and verse 930. He goes on. This is, again, not Michael Savage. This is Geert Wilders. He says, Madam Speaker, the West has no problem with Jews or Christians, but it does have problems with Islam. It is still possible even today for Muslims to view the Quran, which they regard as valid for all time, as a license to kill. And that is exactly what happens. He says, the Quran is worded in such a way that its instructions are addressed to Muslims for eternity, which includes today's Muslims. This in contrast to texts in the Bible, which is formulated as a number of historical narratives, placing events in a distant past. Let us remind ourselves that it was Muslims, not Jews or Christians, who committed the catastrophic terrorist attacks in New York, Madrid, and London, and that it was no coincidence that Theo van Gogh was brutally murdered by a Muslim, Mohammed Bouyari. I will go on and read more from Geert Wilders' speech to the parliament in Holland, because what he says is quite frightening. It's frightening from many different ways. Let me read you one paragraph here before I take a break. He concludes this paragraph. He says, Madam Speaker, the Islamic incursion must be stopped. He means in Europe, certainly not in America. Here, of course, it's on its long march into the White House. He said, Islam is the Trojan horse in Europe. If we do not stop Islamification now, Eurabia and Netherabia will be a matter of time. One century ago, there were approximately 50 Muslims in the Netherlands. Today, there are about 1 million Muslims in the Netherlands. Where will it end? We are heading for the end of European and Dutch civilization as we know it. Where is our prime minister in all of this? In reply to my questions in the House, he said, without batting an eyelid, that there is no question of our country being Islamified. Now, he said, this reply constituted as a historical error as soon as it was uttered. Very many Dutch citizens, Madam Speaker, experienced the presence of Islam around them, and I can report that they have had enough of burqas, headscarves, and ritual slaughter of animals and so-called honor revenge. I am quoting now from Geert Wilders' important and historic speech to Holland's parliament. All across Europe, the Europeans have awakened to the dangers of radical Islam and the trampling of freedom and liberty across Europe. Only in America are we afraid to look around ourselves and see what is actually going on. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We will show that we will not follow anyone. We do not take instructions of anyone, and no one makes decisions for us except for the heartbeat of the country, of the streets, and the demands of the people of this country.
I think it's very real that we do not understand the ebb and flow of the currents in the Middle East. I remember in 2006, when it was being discussed whether Hamas should be permitted to run in Gaza, and the decision was made to let them run, and even the Palestinian leadership believed, well, maybe they'd get 20% of the vote. We were wrong then. They won the parliament overwhelmingly. So I think perhaps we don't understand this.
You mean speak for yourself, Diane. You're so busy cashing in on your Senate position, head of the Senate Intelligence Committee. You have the nerve, Diane Feinstein, to say that perhaps we don't understand this? Who the hell is we? You're talking for yourself and your cronies on the inside there. The American people know what the hell is going on. We know what's going to happen. We saw it happen in Gaza. We saw it happen in Lebanon. Wherever it happens, it happens. You're the only ones who don't seem to understand it because you talk to each other and then you go on MSNBC and you tell each other how wonderful you are. You should get out of the way before there's no America left, for God's sakes. At least that's one man's opinion. Only one man's opinion. This is Obama's greatest political mistake to date, in my opinion. Now, let me go back to Geert Wilders' historic speech to the Dutch parliament. I'm going to read you another paragraph. He said, Islam is in pursuit of dominance. This is Geert Wilders. It wishes to exact its imperialist agenda by force on a worldwide scale. Again, he cites 839 from the Quran. And he says this is clear from European history. Fortunately, the first Islamic invasion of Europe was stopped at Poitiers in 732, the second in Vienna in 1683. Madam Speaker, let us ensure that the third Islamic invasion, which is currently in full spate, will be stopped too, in spite of its insidious nature, and notwithstanding the fact that in contrast to the 8th and 17th centuries, it has no need for an Islamic army, because the scared demis in the West, also those in Dutch politics, have left their doors wide open to Islam and Muslims. Let me stop right here. I look around America, and I am telling you, there's nothing but the hollow man. I see nothing but hollow men and dumb children on Blackberries. All I do is see idiots twittering. You walk past cell phone stores and you see morons wanting to buy the latest device to communicate with each other about what they're doing, where they're going, how they feel, what's going on. They don't know what's going on in the world. They have no idea what history is. They don't understand that they're part of history and that they can lose the very freedoms that they're using to go on their stupid little idiotic thumb devices. No, it's a very, very dim time. This is one of the darkest times in American history. I know it's very hard for people to accept this because there's still plenty of food on the table. There's still relatively peace. It's still a time where people can go around without weapons in their pockets, by and large, with the exception of certain places in America where even the cops are afraid to go. But by and large, times like this are very rare in human history. They're not the norm. They are the exception. And when we have a weak president, if you want to call him that, I'm not so sure he's so weak. Many of you think he's a sleeper president. I wouldn't go that far. I actually think that Obama is, he's a Marxist. That's understandable. Certainly he was put in power by very, very, very big forces. We have our suspicion who they are. And they brought about the collapse of the economic system in order to usher him in and make you frightened so you'd vote for an unknown. Now that he's in office, he's making one gigantic mistake after another. This is his biggest to date. The Middle East almost blew up in his face, and it's only half the day since Mubarak said he's staying.
Savage.
We have found out that we're completely naked here. We have a very, very poor intelligence community in the United States of America. Many of us have felt that for a long period of time. It has become a crisis under the college teacher who's running America. He has appointed one front man after another in the CIA. The head of the CIA this morning saying that Mubarak would step down. He was wrong again. And then shockingly, the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, says that the Muslim Brotherhood is secular and that it's now peaceful. Listen to this speech.
Let me just speak briefly to the Muslim Brotherhood as an international movement, and then I'll ask Director Mueller to speak specifically to it here domestically. The reason I do that, of course, is because this is the Muslim Brotherhood is prominent in what's going on now in Egypt and elsewhere in the Mideast. The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements. In the case of Egypt, a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam.
The man is completely wrong. Either he's lying or he's incompetent. In either case, he has to be fired immediately. His own agency. Now, remember, this is the head of the defense. National Intelligence, Director of National Intelligence, just said things about the Muslim Brotherhood that his own agency had to override and correct. They said, to clarify Director Clapper's point, blah, blah, blah. They even said he is well aware that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a secular organization. His own spokesmouth had to come out and correct him. Everybody knows it has not disavowed violence. Everybody knows its goal is to pursue the creation of a worldwide caliphate or Islamic state. The CIA's own website lists the Muslim Brotherhood as a, quote, religious-based party. Those on Capitol Hill, such as Dianne Feinstein, who are busy making business, who are doing very well indeed on their committees, have no idea what they're doing. They have no idea how to protect us. And so we have only a few senators left and a few in Congress who know what's going on. Senator Mark Kirk, Republican of Illinois, said this after hearing Clapper's astonishing cover-up for the Muslim Brotherhood. Senator Kirk said, I am concerned that the DNI's assessment does not agree with recent public statements by senior leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, nor does it agree with the organization's publicly stated goals. He said they're as secular as Billy Graham, and the Pope are secular. That was a former GOP presidential candidate, Mike Huckabee. Good for him. The fact of the matter is they've gotten everything wrong. Many U.S. officials are expressing concern about the possibility of the Muslim Brotherhood taking over Egypt. The only people who are covering for this is Obama, because it was Obama who tried to undermine Mubarak. Now, either Obama didn't understand who was waiting in the wings, or he understood a little too well who would be waiting in the wings once Mubarak went. And the only reason Mubarak has not stepped down, in my opinion, for whatever it's worth, it's one man's opinion. I'm looking in from the outside. I don't receive any intelligence briefings, which, of course, gives me the ability to think clearly. I believe it was Saudi Arabia who pulled the curtain over this and said, no, he's not going. Are you people that stupid, he probably, the Saudi king said to Obama? Are you crazy to want to get rid of Mubarak? Don't you know what's going to happen? Look at Iran. You're going to have the Muslim Brotherhood take over. It was the Muslim Brotherhood who killed Sadat. Don't you understand that? Because he made peace with Israel? They're still there. So, of course, Mubarak suppressed them. For the survival of his nation, he suppressed them. Do you realize Egypt is a country of 80 million people with 10 million Christians living in relative peace? Not total peace, because radical Muslim fanatics blew up a Christian church in Egypt on New Year's Day, killing many people. You didn't hear about that because Fox News was busy covering one of the movies that they put out on the 20th Century Fox Searchlight. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game, as long as related to Egypt. Did Obama make his greatest policy mistake thus far today? Has this blown up in his face? John in Washington, D.C., welcome to the program from TNT. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I talked in Egypt on January 28th.
What you think?
Tomorrow. And I said, hey, you know, things are really bad in Cairo, and they've been a worthy friend for all these years that Mubarak has been there. I mean, at least he's providing protection on one flank for Israel. And, you know, we ought to send the fleet there. What the hell do we have a fleet for if we can't protect the Suez Canal? I said, that's...
Well, you must have been listening to my show, because I've been calling for it since the uprisings began.
Thing I heard, you know, when I heard there was trouble there, I thought, well, that these crazies.
Right. What the hell is the U.S. Navy for? What, to train people who can't get jobs? To get them off the streets and give them a uniform? I've never seen a more incompetent pacifist military than it is under Obama. It's useless. It's not doing anything.
Well, it's a shame, because the price of gas is going up, and Obama is not a dummy. He's the 12th imam. He's a jihadist, and everybody gives him the benefit of the doubt. He might be in over his head on this, you know? He's not in over his head. This is his life's mission. This is what his father wanted him to do. This is what Muslims want him to do. He's the worst guy in the world. He's in cahoots with the Muslim Brotherhood.
You know, it's interesting. This is the second caller we've had in 30 minutes who believes that Obama is a plant of the radical Muslims in the White House. Now, if you were alone and crazy, you wouldn't even have gotten on the air, but I keep hearing this over and over and over again. Now, I guess you would offer as proof his behavior rather than his background. Is that correct, or both?
He always favors the Muslims, even at the mosque for Ground Zero, even for the burning of the Koran, that nut down in Florida that wanted to burn the Koran. Everything he does is to favor Muslims.
Can you tell me why the Fort Hood massacre, Major Nidal Hassan, has not yet been brought to trial?
He doesn't even want to call him a terrorist. He ran down to Tucson to speak out down there asking for civility. Did he ever go down to Fort Hood? He's the commander-in-chief. He didn't go down there and eulogize those people that died. 13 people got slaughtered down there. He didn't go down
by
there.
A Muslim major who screamed Allah Akbar in white robes before he assassinated the soldiers who were unarmed. And this story was buried by the very same crybaby media that's sitting there crying over the protesters in Egypt.
Yeah, you know what Nassan's business card said? It said it had his name, and it said Soldier of Islam.
And the military didn't throw him out, huh?
You know, here he's writing Walter Reed in Washington, D.C. They knew he was trouble. They promoted him from major to lieutenant colonel and sent him down to Fort Hood where he could really do some damage.
Right. The Secretary of the Army should have been fired right after this event. The Secretary of Defense should have been fired after this. Nobody lost their job, John. I understand the danger we are in. I have no idea how this gets saved. How do we save our country after 2 years of this regime? How are we going to save the country?
I don't know. People have to wake up and realize that we have a saboteur. We have a one-man wrecking ball killing us internationally. You know, when he saw Tunisia going and Yemen and Egypt and Jordan threatened and Turkey going the other way, when people talk about a caliphate, just look at a map of the Mediterranean. You know, they're going back.
Well, I called him Obama the Destroyer and trickle-up poverty, and apparently only a couple of 100,000 people believe me.
You know, in 1492, coincidentally, that was when the Moors were defeated. The Muslims in Spain were defeated. And all of a sudden, we had a renaissance. We had a discovery of a new world because they took, you know, the stranglehold off of the world. And we're being put back to where the heck we were in 1492 by these same people. People have to wise up. You're right.
Well, John, I appreciate your anger and your passion. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe, as this caller just said, do you actually have the same dark vision of the president that so many people are suddenly uttering, that this man planned the overthrow of Mubarak, that he actually wants a radical Muslim arising around the world? Do you actually believe that, or do you believe that Obama's simply a Fabian socialist idealist who wanted to see democracy rise in these Middle Eastern dictatorships, and that it simply blew up in his face because he was completely out of his league? Which side are you on? Mike in Indiana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I have a very beautiful vision for the future of America, sir.
Well, give it to us.
My vision is that in 20 years, I'll be able to walk through the streets of Manhattan and see Gail Collins from the New York Times or Maureen Dow from the New York Times clad in a burqa, following their Muslim husbands around. That's my vision. I want to see Frank Rich Muslim oppression. That's where we're
going. All right, well, there's an awful lot of rage out there because a lot of people see what's going on. I can't comment on any of the comments because I don't agree with them, although it could happen. It can happen here. With the pacifism and the liberalism and the drugs and the alcohol and the lack of knowledge of history, anything is possible in America. And I think that the radical Muslims see their time is now. They don't really need an army. They don't really need an army, although they already have an army. Their armies have been let in under asylum laws, immigration laws, etc. I must tell you that when I see a woman walking in a full head covering from head to toe in America, I wince. I wince at how a nation can permit this throwback costume in the streets of America. I wince at how a nation that builds itself on the freedom of women and women's liberation can permit the enclosure of a woman within a prison. It's a prison imposed upon her by an overbearing, vicious husband who would put his wife in such a situation. And any country that is liberated would not permit this kind of outfit. France banned the burqa, by the way. You think we should ban the burqa? Of course we should. It should not be permitted. A head covering is another story. It would be the same thing as a man wearing a head covering going into a synagogue. You cover your head out of deference to God, but to wrap a woman up where only her eye slits show? And by the way, this should be offensive to women. All women should see this as a form of slavery. How could this be going on, I ask myself, with almost no outcry in America? Well, I know the answer. We've been beaten up for 30 years by liberalism, which has taught us to look the other way, even when for those of us who actually see it, we're afraid to say a word about it. But I'm afraid most people don't even see what's obvious to them. So I don't know whether God is behind all of this or not, and I don't know which side God is on, to be honest with you. I have mixed feelings about it. Sometimes I feel that this country has become so godless, so degenerate, so sick, that God has introduced radical Islam in order to either save us or kill us. I'm not sure. It's like a do or die situation. Either the radical Muslims will awaken us to who we are, what we once had, and what we've become, or we will disappear as a people altogether, a society, I should say. And I believe that it may be God's hand behind it at this point. It's the only way I can look at it and have some sense of peace about it all. Because when I cannot understand something from a social point of view, I have to go to a cosmic point of view. And let me repeat again what I'm thinking, just so you get it. I believe God's hand is behind this invasion of the West by radical Muslims. I believe God wanted us to see the weakness of liberalism and secularism and multiculturalism. And I then believe God insists that we either change our ways and either go back to God's word, go back to the church, go back to the temple, try our best, take one step forward in a more dignified, more godlike life, or we're going to lose our society completely. And that will be the end of civilization as we know it. We will descend into 1,000 years of darkness. That's my dark vision. I'll be right back. Savage. We the people seem to be sitting here alone, watching the world burn around us while Nero fiddles. Either we have a totally incompetent dreamer in the White House or something that is a little more nefarious. And I'd rather not speculate on the nefarious nature of the presidency at this time. It's not going to get us anywhere. All we can do is sit here and wonder how a man can hold a job as the head of the Defense National Intelligence Agency and make a statement that the Muslim Brotherhood is secular and is pursuing social ends, and that he has to be overridden by his own spokesmouth minutes later because of the obvious idiocy of his remarks, and how we then have to listen to Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is the head, if you can believe it, of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who says perhaps we don't understand what's going on in the Middle East when she's speaking for herself. Of course she doesn't understand. They may as well be the British parliamentarians, the Whigs in the 18th century. Big fat wigs with white wigs on, with powder on, not knowing what the poor, the little people are living through. They're so fat. They're so fat on their deals, and they're so fat on their insulation from the people. Of course they don't know what's going on. It's the mark of a civilization at the end of its road. Everyone I know with brains says, can we go on any longer with a country with such paltry leadership as this? I don't have an answer for them. And so, yesterday I had a good day on the show. Time went by very easily. I was Dr. Mike. I took your personal calls. And that was fun. You know, but a day like today, when you see that Mubarak stands up to Obama and Soros and says, no, you're not throwing me out of my own country. Go to hell, basically. And our own CIA didn't know it was coming. Our own Senate didn't see it coming. The president tried to engineer his ouster and he couldn't achieve it because Saudi Arabia probably said no. Are you people that naive, that stupid? What's wrong with you? We're going to lose Saudi Arabia to the radicals in our own country. And they're radical enough for me, by the way. You know, the Wahhabi sect of the Wahhabi sect of Islam that is coming out of some element of Saudi Arabia is poisoning the minds of millions of young Muslims around the West, teaching them to cut the hands off thieves, teaching them that Christians need to be converted, teaching them the Jews are the descendants of monkeys and pigs. In England, they're teaching them that. For all I know, they're teaching them that here. I wouldn't know that. The Department of Homeland Security would probably arrest anybody who found such a booklet. They'd call you a racist. So at a time like this, when I'm simply one man trying to make sense out of all of this, I got to tell you, on the way to the studio today, it was right before Mubarak's speech, I must tell you, I had just eaten, Chinese lunch, not to get into the lunch thing. I was walking around, the streets are gorgeous here in San Francisco. I felt sick because I knew Mubarak was going to speak. I felt nauseous. It was like one of the worst days of my adult life. And I kept saying to myself, why are you taking this so personally? What are you walking around in such a cloud? You're not Egyptian. And then I kept saying, I almost feel as though this is the end of the world as I know it. I felt as if Obama was successful in pushing Mubarak out and the radical Muslims took over Egypt, which they will most certainly do if he does leave within a few months, as happened in Iran. I felt as if I was watching the end of the West in front of my eyes. I felt it was one of the darkest days of my adult life. And then I got back to the studio and I turned the TV on and I saw that all of the wonderful geniuses in our intelligence community that take trillions of dollars from us got it all wrong. Everything wrong. It's just a big bloated bureaucracy. that probably spends more money spying on Americans than they do spying on Al-Qaeda. I'd like to know what the budget differential is for spying on Americans who are not guilty of anything. They got it all wrong. But when I heard that Mubarak was going to stay there, I said, of course Mubarak is a dictator. But what is the result of the dictatorship with regard to the world order? Well, the old world order, which is the one we're living in, which is what I defined it as, go steal it for tomorrow, Blackboard. Go steal it tomorrow, Blackboard. We're living in the old world order. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a damn good world order as far as I'm concerned. I'm not looking forward to a new world order, okay? I don't want the new world order. I don't want Obama's new world socialist union, because that's what the new world order is. It's one gigantic Soviet satellite nation, a satellite world. Every one of us, an appendage of some new world order run out of Brussels or God knows where. I don't want it. I don't need it. It's not what an American wants. So when I got to the studio and saw Mubarak was not going to step down, I actually felt liberated. I felt that maybe there is a hope for the world, that just maybe some of the more intelligent powers on earth can stop this madman before he destroys the entire world. That's what I felt. That's one man's opinion. That's what I felt. That somebody has to stop this guy. He is so out of control. I wouldn't go so far as to say he's the ninth imam and he's taking over the world. I would say the man is completely out of his league. I would say that the man doesn't know what he was doing. I called him Obama the Destroyer in Trickle-Up Poverty. And you know what? I want you to go out and read that book. I want you to reread the book on Obama the Destroyer in Trickle-Up Poverty. And I want you to go to the bookstores and buy it, damn it, if you haven't bought it yet. That is right. It was the most important book of 2010. Read it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We saw what happened today, which is that the American intelligence community has no intelligence. They got everything wrong from the top to the bottom. We see that Obama the meddler, the Obama the destroyer, has, frankly, for the sake of humanity, not had his way with the Middle East. Thank God. I know you're going to say, well, are you on the side of dictators? I am not going to let you put me in that position. Just because the entire media complex is now on the side of overthrowing Mubarak without looking at the ramifications of such an act doesn't mean I have to join them. I read Kipling when I was very young. If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you'll be a man, my son. I'm not going to lose my head. I see very clearly what will follow once Mubarak is gone, and that is something much worse. Now, if Obama did not understand this, he is not fit to be president. If he is simply doing the bidding of George Soros, as I suspect he is doing, and as I pointed out in a 13-page essay, which you can still find on my website, michaelsavage.com, for reasons that I'm afraid I too well understand, then it's even worse than I think. And so I throw the question to you again. Do you think that Obama's bungling and setting the Middle East on fire is a result of his idealism and his inexperience, or a direct result of his desire to bring about a new world order where there is a Muslim caliphate around the world? I know many of you actually have this incredibly dark vision of the president. I'm not so sure that it's that. I think that the man is simply inexperienced, idealistic. I'm not certain that I would go as far as those of you do who say he's a sleeper, although it starts to become one and the same at a certain point. At a certain point, it doesn't matter what his orientation is with regard to radical Islam. The end result may be the same. So I'm going to take your calls. Valerie in Portland, Oregon, what's your opinion? Is it incompetence or something more nefarious on the part of the president?
Well, but I don't know. I just feel like we're putting two and two together, and we're not exactly sure what the answer is. But the thing is that when you have this director of intelligence completely ignorant, it's like you said before, is he lying or is he ignorant? But if he's lying, then that begs the other question. And that's what's
scary. The head of the National Intelligence, James Clapper, who just last December was on television when he was stumped when asked about a major set of terrorists that day in Great Britain, didn't even know about it. The same man keeps his job under Obama the Destroyer. And today this jerk says that the Muslim Brotherhood is now a social group for the betterment of the political order. It has no religious underpinnings. The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term, is to shoot violence. And his own agency has to override him and say he didn't really mean that. Then we're really in trouble.
Michael, what is his motivation for saying that? Because you and I both know we can do a little bit of cursory research on the internet, and we know it. That's completely false.
You mean why would the director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, go out of his way to whitewash the Muslim Brotherhood and their threat within Egypt and the world? Why would he do that?
Why?
I think the next question is why would Obama have appointed him? And why would the Senate have ratified him? Who is he? Well, he has a distinguished career in the U.S. Air Force. I looked it up. But that doesn't mean anything unto itself. Not in the world we're living in.
Exactly. And it's happening on all levels and all these different Obama.
When we see that under George Bush, the SEC, the watchdog agency for the Wall Street crooks and wolves, allowed the wolves to eat the sheep. And none of the leaders of the Wall Street meltdown have yet been indicted or gone to jail. Why should we assume that there's any difference in any agency in any federal government, any agency of the federal government?
I think we should assume that at all. And then
there we are. I apologize in advance if this is not civil enough for all of you. But at a certain point, I think we have to awaken from our slumber. And I'm asking you what you think. Let's go to Haley in Merced, California on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please. Go ahead.
Dr. Savage. When the Obama administration first came into office, I remember you called him Neville Chamberlain, an appeaser, but I really think at this point he's more like a Leninist. He's more of a communist, essentially. He believes in Sharia law. He stands on a dangerous political ideal rather than...
You actually believe President Obama would like to see Sharia law in the United States of America? What gives you that impression?
I think from his past history, I mean, first of all, we don't know anything about his college papers, his time at the Harvard Law Review. And during that time, he went on a trip to Pakistan under an Indonesian passport. He was trained at Muslim schools in Indonesia. And, I mean, let's be realistic here. Muslim schools are very different than our, say, Catholic schools here in the U.S. It's all about indoctrination. It's all about making these children into jihadists, essentially. And I know there's a lot of people in the world that are going to debate with me on this and call me ignorant, stupid, hate-filled, whatever they may call me. He believes in ideals that are dangerous, that are going to hurt the United States, and I think we can see
so
that.
So let's take it down to the pragmatics of the day. Obama wanted Mubarak out for what reason, in your opinion? You're taking the darker view. That he wanted the Muslim Brotherhood to take over? He wanted to see an Islamic State in Egypt?
We could say that he's maybe being pulled by two forces. There's maybe the Muslim Brotherhood. He wants to somehow work with Muslims and help them. And there's the other side, his more leftist American side, which is saying, we should promote democracy. We should promote democracy. And then you have, we should support the Muslims. And so he never wants to support Mubarak. It's either... allow the Muslim Brotherhood.
All right, so
in.
Let's assume you're correct. He's the most powerful man in the world. How come he was not able to engineer Mubarak out of business? Who stopped him?
I don't think he really wanted to. I don't think the...
Wait, you just said that he wanted Mubarak out, so what do you think happened? How did Obama get stopped in having a Mubarak fall? Who stopped him?
I think his intelligence officers having maybe a little more seditious ideals than he does. I think maybe they're wanting that to happen. And Barack Obama, being the utopian idealist that he is, is going to go with the idea that seems most peaceful, most leftist radical.
But the question I'm throwing to you as a listener is, why do you suppose Obama's plans for Mubarak blew up in his face?
It's a difficult question.
My analysis, would you like mine?
Yeah,
because Saudi Arabia stepped in. Because if Egypt went, Saudi Arabia would fall in the next year. Remember, they've been fighting an Islamist insurgency in Saudi Arabia forever. Remember, the as radical as the Saudis are, they're rather moderate compared to what will follow. And they're a very powerful oil-rich nation. I don't have to tell you that. Would you like to see the Islamists take over Saudi Arabia and hang the royal family? I don't want to see that. They're actually, despite their orientation, our best friends. And so the fact of the matter is, if Egypt went, Saudi Arabia, Jordan would follow, and then we would have a nightmare scenario on our hands. There'd be almost no way to control the emergence of a new world order run by Muslims. And that's why the Saudis stepped in and said, you're not going to have us hung inside our palaces. We are not going to hang like Saddam Hussein. They cracked down, and they sent out the message that Mubarak is not stepping down. They even said so the other day. They even called him their friend the other day. They said that they're on his side. And I was shocked today when I woke up and I read that Mubarak said he was going to step down because I didn't think he would. And our own CIA director said Mubarak's going to step down by the end of the day. That's what he gets billions of dollars a year for, Mr. Pancetta?
I totally agree with you, Dr. Savage. That's brilliant geopolitical analysis. And I have to say that I totally agree with you because I think that Barack Obama and the people around him are not as skilled in geopolitics as we'd like to think.
I don't think so either. I think that they're rather naive college types who see the world through rose-colored glasses at best. At best, they're the utopian idealists that universities are filled with. Absolutely dangerous old hippies. 1-800-449-8255. One quick call at this junction. You can call us with your opinion of what's going on in Egypt on the Savage Nation. Portland, Oregon. Richard, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
I agree with you. I think he's truly naive. I think you're attributing a lot more to his thinking than he's even attributing to his thinking.
Well, that's what I said. Which side are you on? Do you think that it's the nefarious 11th Imam, or who is he? I don't believe he's the 11th Imam. I think he's just simply a utopian idealist communist who's over his head and doesn't even know what's going on in the world.
He really does. I think.
But Richard, it seems to me that he continues to capitulate towards Muslim dictators around. Remember during his tour of Egypt, how he met with the Muslim Brotherhood? Do you remember this? I mean, how he constantly bows to foreign dictators like China?
Popularity contest. And don't you think he's trying to appear to be the above it all?
Well, I don't know what he's trying to do. All I know is that America is suffering as a result of his incompetence. And it doesn't matter whether his incompetence is driven by his ideology or his lack of knowledge. I'll be right back.
Savage.
At 11:40 a.m. this morning, Eastern Time, CIA Director Leon Panetta says that U.S. intelligence, so-called, indicates that Egyptian President Mubarak is on his way out. Panetta told Congress that his information now, this is the head of the CIA, his information indicates Mubarak could be out by Thursday night. He says there is a high likelihood of that. Panetta did not say exactly how the CIA reached that conclusion. He said Mubarak's exit would be significant in moving Egypt to an orderly transition of power. Notice the code words again that Obama has been using, orderly transition. Let us play Leon Panetta this morning in clip 8. Listen to
this. I got the same information you did, that there is a strong likelihood that Mubarak may step down, which would be significant in terms of where the hopefully orderly transition in Egypt takes place.
Hopefully orderly transition. This is the head of the most important intelligence agency that we have that gets hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Hopefully an orderly transition. Now, what evidence does he have that this would be an orderly transition? What do you mean, hopefully? What is this, a college class? Take a look at what happened with the so-called orderly transitions in nations where we overthrew a so-called dictator. Listen to clip 12 now, Leon Panetta.
If there is an orderly transition here,
if
Egypt, as the administration has urged, can move to reach out to the elements, all of the elements of the opposition, and be able to develop a timeline for political reforms that
what
lead
rubbish.
To hopefully free and open
hopefully.
Elections, then I think it could, you know, it could have a positive effect with regards to that area.
You're listening to the absurdities of an academician. You're listening to the mumblings of a mad academician as though he's at a college seminar in Monterey, California, talking in a vacuum. The entire Obama administration is filled with leftist college professors who don't have a foot in the world of reality. It's frightening to believe that we put our country in their hands. But it got worse. It got worse than this. Later on in the day, the head of the Defense National Intelligence Agency, Defense National Intelligence, James Clapper, went on the air, went in front of the same committee hearing run by Dianne Feinstein, herself a paragon of intelligence. If you want to know where shopping carts will be placed next, in which airport they will appear, all you got to do is ask Dianne Feinstein. He goes before her hearing and listen to what he says.
The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements.
Right.
In the case of Egypt, a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam.
This is the head of the National Intelligence for the United States of America. CIA chief got it wrong. Director of National Intelligence says the Muslim Brotherhood is secular and has given up violence. His own agency jumps over his statements and says we have to clarify what Director Clapper said. In any democracy, both the head of the CIA and Director of National Intelligence would be forced to resign tomorrow. But we're not living in a democracy. We're living in a putative democracy. We're living in a semblance of a democracy. Where do we have the audacity to tell other nations how to run their affairs when we have people at the top who can't run their affairs correctly? I rest my case. Is this incompetence or is it nefarious? That's what I'd like to know. Do you believe Obama is incompetent or is there a nefarious force at play here? Peter in New York on WOR, your opinion, please.
Michael, I don't think he is a nefarious. I think he's a scary buffoon. Meaning that he has such an ego, and he's so not intelligent that it's a terrible combination.
What you mean in Obama now? He's so filled with his own hubris and he lacks real knowledge of what's going on in the world. It's not more nefarious, in your opinion?
Correct. I mean, anytime he has not been in front of a teleprompter, he has just said ridiculous things.
How do you explain Fox News repeating the government lie day and night now that Mubarak's a dictator and democracy is waiting to emerge from the masses? How do you explain this?
It's interesting because Fox, owned by a Saudi company.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up, right? It's 19% owned by a Saudi prince. People don't know that. But Rupert Murdoch sold 90% of News Corporation quite a while ago. It is one-fifth minority owned by a Saudi prince. That explains almost everything that comes out of the mouth of the puppets on Fox News, which is now a very active arm of the government media complex. So there it is. What do you think? Mississippi, Travis, your opinion counts. You're next up on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I think that he's just a puppet, doing what he's told to do.
Who is he a puppet of? Who was Obama a puppet of, in your opinion?
George Soros, the globalists, the other hedge fund managers.
All right. Well, you're not, from my opinion, I wrote an essay on it. I hope you read it on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, my friend, because the MFA is described in detail in this seminal book from 2010.
Savage.
Now, many of you don't know what to think. I understand that. You're in the middle. You're listening to this. You don't know whether I'm an extremist and Obama's a genius or vice versa. I want to read you remarks from a devout Muslim, a wonderful man, Dr. Zudi Jasser. He's a devout Muslim. He's been on the show before, and he's the president and founder of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. He took real exception to what D&I Clapper said today about the Muslim Brotherhood. Okay? He said this. American Muslim organization calls remarks from D&I Clapper false and dangerous. He said the Muslim Brotherhood is the antithesis of a secular organization, as asserted today by James Clapper, director of national intelligence. Remember now, this is Dr. Zudi Jasser, a devout Muslim and the president and founder of the American Islamic Forum. He said that the D&I statement presents a significant concern, blah, blah, blah. The Muslim Brotherhood, he says, is built on the ideology of political Islam, which adheres to a belief in Islamic supremacy. He said further, the Muslim Brotherhood is a threat to the political process in a post-Mubarak Egypt. Thugs like Mubarak have created an atmosphere that has allowed the Brotherhood to thrive. The United States needs to be active within the country of Egypt, countering the ideology of the Brotherhood, helping the people of Egypt develop liberty-minded democratic infrastructure to secure the country's future. We need to demonstrate to Egyptians that freedom does not come in the form of Islamic law or in the rule of theocratic clerics. He then goes on to say, our intelligence community cannot afford to allow political correctness or this mistaken understanding of the Brotherhood to enter the conversation of how we will confront the changes in Egypt. Again, that's from a man who knows the difference between political Islam and such. 1-800-449-8255. Let's take your calls. Let us go to the callers around the country. Virginia, Carla, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I think he's nefarious because I think that this Panetta guy was spreading rumors on purpose so that the people, you know, it was all day long reported, we're going to have Mubarak stepping down, Mubarak stepping down. It's on the reports. It's on the news. And then he comes out and he doesn't. Of course, the people now are going to be angrier.
Angry at who?
Angrier at Mubarak. So now what are they going to do tomorrow? Are they going to revolt more?
So you think that this is an attempt to frustrate the Egyptian people so that they, in fact, do riot?
Yes. Continue to riot. Continue to rise against Mubarak. And then when
why would Obama want to burn a country to the ground? How does he gain? Look, this is something important. The currency in Egypt, they've stopped trading in it because it's been beaten up so badly, right? George Soros made his fortune as a currency trader. He almost destroyed the English pound by betting against it. He almost destroyed the Malaysian currency by betting against it. We will not know whether or not George Soros is in this for ideological purposes or for financial reasons until the end of the year when the Soros hedge fund has to report its earnings or losses. We will not know how much money this man just made on the Egyptian currency, or if he made any money or lost any money, will we?
No, and see, okay, so perhaps maybe you're saying, so Barack Obama...
I am saying what I've been saying for two straight weeks, that the people behind Obama, make no mistake about it, are in it for the money. They're in it for the power. They're in it for the glory. But most primarily, they're in it for profit. And so if they're willing to burn a nation to the ground, they're doing so because they're making out like bandits in some way. First, they went long on oil, then they probably shorted oil when it fell back, and then they may have gone short on the Egyptian pound and now jumped out of the Egyptian pound after taking billions in profits. We don't know what they made, but you can bet your life that somebody's making money off this nightmare.
I know someone's making money off it, but ultimately, if the Muslim Brotherhood takes over, what happens to Israel?
Doesn't matter. The American left hates Israel. It's just to them, it's nothing. It's like Cuba is to the Russians today. They don't care about Israel.
But I care about Israel.
Well, of course you care. I care about Israel as well. But Israel today is the equivalent of Taiwan. As you well know, China could take up Taiwan tomorrow. Obama would look the other way. You know Obama has absolutely no loyalty to any of our allies. He pulled the defense umbrella off of Czechoslovakia and Poland. Remember that? Remember that outcry a year ago? Remember what happened then?
It's painful. Everything is painful to me. I can't bear even to watch it.
I understand, which is why a lot of people have stopped watching the news, Carla. Many of us are in agony over what Obama's doing to the world. He is destroying the world's order. And make no mistake about it, his administration is behind this. Look at his messages from the beginning. He wanted Mubarak to leave. Again, I have to ask, did he do so hoping there would be a democracy arising? If he did so, on what basis would he expect a democracy to arise in Egypt? What example does he have of throwing out a leader and seeing a democracy arise in an Islamic nation, in a Muslim nation, excuse me? Show me an example of where that's occurred.
He has no example.
It has never occurred. Wherever a Muslim leader has left, a radical Islamist state has emerged. So on what basis would Obama expect otherwise? Well, on what basis would the CIA expect otherwise? Something is wrong with this picture, and I'd like your opinion on this. Sacramento, Ramon, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I believe President Obama's agenda is purely nefarious. He has been conspiring with the Muslim Brotherhood to undermine the Mubarak government. He continues to do so today. His intentions are to divest the United States of any of its current allies that he deems to be allied to the American right. As such, him being a crypto socialist, his agenda is to make the world safe for socialism. He is not an incompetent buffoon. You consider that he has moved that agenda quite a bit of late, and any other interpretation is grossly naive. He is for
I think
anyone.
That you're very careful in what you just said. It's a very carefully constructed paragraph that you just expressed on the Savage Nation. I especially like your phrase crypto-socialist. I enjoy that very much. I would like to believe you're correct, but a part of me tells me that the entire administration can't be crypto. Well, wait a minute. Let me go back to what you just said. You said that they're against any alliance that strengthens the American right, and they'll take it down no matter what the cost. They'll burn a nation to the ground in order to destroy an alliance between America's right wing and that nation. Is that what you're alleging?
Absolutely. He wants a power vacuum in Egypt because he knows that the vacuum will defer to the Muslim Brotherhood.
And how does America gain if the Muslim Brotherhood accedes to power?
Left gains. They don't care. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
So the left gains. All they care about is making the world safe for socialism.
Correct. That's his only intent.
And so, therefore, you believe they want to see... Well, I also think there's an element that Obama wants to see an uprising in Israel, a new intifada, and Israel having to cede the West Bank, so-called, to the Palestinians, the emergence of a Palestinian state, and him getting another Nobel Prize from the people who invented dynamite in Sweden.
More important than that, it would get him a feather in his cap with the left throughout the world. And this is why he is so cynical about Israel, our one true ally in that part of the world, and perhaps our best ally in the world, in spite of their left-wing faction as well.
Ramon, without going into details about your life, are you an author, a writer? What do you do?
I'm an investor, but more importantly, I'm a person that tries to be as unbiased as possible. This is a
You sound very clear thinking. I would buy your theory. Do you think as well that the people who invested in Obama in the beginning have profited from the unrest in Egypt?
Absolutely. You were talking about Soros. Soros is the ultimate insider information man. Now, he is a left-wing apparatchik, but that's only convenient for him. He has set up his leftist network and organization throughout the world. They repay him with insider information. For instance, Obama repaid him with the brokering of oil for Brazil in the American Gulf, in the Caribbean. He did this to repay him. That is how you repay Soros.
How could we find out if the Soros Fund made money off trading in the Egyptian pound over the last 2 weeks? Is there any way to find out right now?
Absolutely. He endears himself with any revolution that he helps conspire, and he intimidates any Democratic.
But it was Soros who just funded the purchase of the Huffington Post by AOL, is what I've been reading. Is that your reading as well?
AOL. oil will crash and burn even faster. But
right, when they put a gold digger opportunist like the reinvented Arianna Huffington, first fake conservative, then fake progressive, now fake capitalist, they put her in charge of AOL News. Why? And so Soros can go out and hire 150 so-called investigative reporters who will report radical left-wing views of everything on Earth on the AOL website? It's amazing to me.
He's a crony capitalist who knows how to work the agenda on either side. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, Soros, if he could not manipulate the left as well as he wished to, he would resort to manipulating the right instead of just simply intimidating.
So he knows that the left are filled with kind of soft-brained individuals who are easily manipulated. Just feed them the rhetoric they want to hear.
Right. They don't.
As an investor, Ramon, is there any way to see if the Soros Fund has made any money on the Egyptian pound in the last 2 weeks?
There is, but the way to look at it is that the money will not come during the revolution. The money will come in about a year or two.
When? Why?
Because just like Obama repaid Soros, the new government has to be entrenched before they can manipulate the insider information that he so cravenly...
What if individuals who were behind overthrowing Mubarak for the last 2 years, we know they've been plotting it and planning it, bringing in activists to be educated, so-called, at the State Department on how to bring about a so-called Twitter revolution. So this has been carefully planned. It's been carefully financed, as we found out. Wouldn't these individuals have bought into the pound 3 months ago, the Egyptian pound?
Obama chastised one of his intelligence heads because he was saying that the Muslim Brotherhood might come out ahead. Now, he was quickly silenced because his fat pension is going to disappear if he does it.
No, but you're not answering my question. Wouldn't these individuals behind the Egyptian the overthrow of Mubarak, would they not have invested in the Egyptian pound in shorting it 2 months ago or a month ago?
Yes, they would have.
Okay, and, so how can we find out who benefited from the shorting of the Egyptian pound as near as 30 days ago? Is there any way for any listener to this show to get that information? Because it's going to tell us more than we can speculate on. That will tell us more than anything. Who profited from shorting the Egyptian pound? I'd love the answer to that one. How do we find the answer?
By talking to the investment bankers and hedge fund managers who handle these.
Yeah, good luck, but they're all protected by the Obama administration.
Private individuals that know about this simply because they follow the fundamentals. But the big money isn't shorting the currency. The big money will be for Soros in the insider information that it'll take in order for him to really make a big billion-dollar move. And that will come after.
Would you think it's fair to call Soros the Rothschild of our time, or is that too nice to him?
That's insulting, Mr. Rothschild.
Okay, I get it. I hear you. Well, you're an intelligent caller. I love callers like this. I'll be right back to take others right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Watching the world go up in smoke because of the Marxist president that we have. Incompetent, the meddler, the imposter, the destroyer. People have a lot of words for this president, the most divisive president in American history. Certainly he's not the first president who has created such division, but never before have we seen such a result of whatever his motivations may be, whether it's incompetence or he's a sleeper. I mean, whichever way you want to look at it, it doesn't matter. The end result is the same. Look at the people he appoints. Look who he put into the CIA, a man with no background in the security field. The former head of a college in Monterey, California, Leon Panetta, comes out this morning and says Mubarak's going to step down. The head of director of a national intelligence, Clapper, comes out and says the Muslim Brotherhood is a secular organization and that we shouldn't fear it. When a devout Muslim and president and founder of the American Islamic Forum of Democracy says that the remarks from Clapper are false and dangerous, that the Muslim Brotherhood is the primary face of political Islam, which is ideologically at war with the United States. Now, how could the head of our Defense National Intelligence Agency say something that every intelligent Muslim knows is wrong. Why would he say this? Has our entire government been paralyzed by Obama's political orientation? Has our entire government been infiltrated by the academic left? Is the United States in danger of falling literally overnight? Could what is happening in Egypt happen here? These are questions that will come up over the next few days and weeks, I can guarantee you. We have a crisis in the world because we have a crisis at home. Because we have a weak, ideologically leftist leader, the world is crumbling around us. Now, you may say it's by accident. My last caller said, don't make any mistake. Obama's no dummy. He knows what's going on. They're doing this because they want this to be done. Say one thing, do another. Tell people to eat carrot sticks and then eat kielbasa and cheeseburgers and fries and assume that people won't notice. Give a lecture about losing weight and put on weight. Grow vegetables in the front garden and eat kielbasa during a football game. And serve kielbasa and frankfurters and ice cream at the White House while telling the people let them eat carrot sticks. And then tell us, well, okay, you got the picture. Chicago, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
All your questions. I'm not defending the guy at all, okay? But it's not entirely Obama, okay? I mean, it's an entire system of government, the way it's run. I was thinking about it today. Do you think at any time in our history that the American people, the American voter, have ever had a chance of actually voting on a law? I've never seen one, you know?
Well, that's why we have, well, that's not why. It's because we have a so-called representative government. Our congressmen and senators are supposed to represent us. There's no popular vote on laws. These wonderful individuals called congressmen and senators, we know how uncorrupt they are, do the people's bidding. They represent us, don't they? Take a look at how well your congressmen in Illinois represent you. Aren't you happy by all of the way that your representatives represent you?
No, they make me sick.
How about your wonderful next mayor of Chicago came out today and said he's in favor of reparations, Rahm Emanuel?
Yeah.
Did you hear that one?
No.
Rahm Emanuel came out today and says he favors slavery reparations. Do you think he put that to a popular vote?
No, he won't. What I'm saying, Mike, is I don't think we've ever had a chance, you know, I mean, of actually having a voice. You know, we all say vote, but the bottom line is, I mean, they're all guilty. They're all disgustingly sickening.
Rahm Emanuel said that he supports reparations for descendants of slavery. All citizens have to pay for it. During the first forum featuring all six candidates for Chicago mayor. There is a word for a man like Rahm Emanuel who is not black. It is called demagogue. He is trying to win over the black vote. He is a demagogue of the highest order. After wrecking the United States of America at a federal level, he's now going back to the municipal level. Okay, that's it. Sacramento, Richard, you're next up. Your opinion, please. Fire away.
Yeah, Michael, I've got to agree with you that it's Saudi Arabia back in Mubarak. As a matter of fact, King Abdul and Mubarak are good friends. So you hit
that.
The nail
well,
on
that
him.
Came out, of course. The king said he's a friend of mine and I don't want him overthrown. So the king probably said to Obama, back the heck off. You're not throwing him out. You're not going to manipulate an entire nation like this.
Yeah, but, Mike, what I don't understand is, if 90% of Fox is owned by the Saudis, why is Fox backing the protesters and not Mubarak? I don't get that.
20% of Fox is owned by a Saudi prince. One-fifth is owned by a Saudi prince. 19% the last I checked. Why would he want Mubarak to be overthrown? Ask Bill O'Reilly. He might have the answer.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. genius in the CIA, Leon Panetta, this morning says, that he's going to retire, resign, that Mubarak's going to step down. I guess he got that wrong. And our genius director of national intelligence says that the Muslim Brotherhood is largely peaceful and secular, has given up violence. Nobody can believe that. Nobody can believe the level of total incompetence by the Obama administration. Very important individual in the media sent an article to me, actually a one-liner, saying that what we all know is true, that Obama was unable to throw Mubarak out. I sent back a line, blew up in his face. He sent back a line, I guess Obama's a radical, not just a Muslim. I sent him a line, this is Obama's biggest mistake to date. The Soros-Clinton-Obama media complex was beaten by the Saudi Arabia-Israel Old War World Order complex. He said, yes, yes, we can. And he said, no, we can't. I said, soon the tight jeans will be replaced by the headscarves, the blackberries by knives. The tanks will roll, the libs will squeal. Candle vigils throughout America in solidarity with their Egyptian brothers and sisters. And then a wave of asylum immigrants from Egypt, their jeans back on, their knives away. That's the world, according to Obama. Blew up the whole world in order to push the New World Order, and it blew up in his face. The situation obviously is going to change. As I said, the head of the CIA was very prescient, Mr. Panetta. The man said that there's a strong likelihood Mubarak would step down tonight. Guess he got that wrong, like everything else. In fact, Mubarak said, back off, it's my country, don't tell me what to do. I guess Obama, the meddler, can't put this clock back together again. Questions for the Savage Nation are, since Mubarak has said he will stay in office until September after it was reported he would step down, is this Obama's greatest defeat? Do you actually admire Mubarak for staying in place in the face of international opposition? Leon Panetta, the head of the CIA who looks like Peter Sellers, said this morning that Mubarak would resign. How did he get it so wrong? Should the director of so-called intelligence resign, as clearly he has no intelligence? What do you think of a media that so completely buys into the government line that they get the biggest international news story of the decade completely wrong? You got Glenn Beck screaming on the air that we propped up a dictator. You've got Anderson Blooper on CNN screaming about the poor people rioting in the streets as just kids with blackberries. One and the same. One and the same. Will the square in Egypt turn into another Tiananmen Square within the next 48 hours? Who do you think will control Egypt a month from now? Where will this revolution that was begun by the Soros-Obama media complex next spread? Incidentally, there's other news. Trump was at the CPAC conference. He was cheered and booed at the conservative conference when he said the truth, which is that Ron Paul cannot be elected. Cheney heckled at the conference. Draft dodger, where has Bin Laden? This is at a so-called conservative conference. Michelle Obama? Oh, really? She had a listen-only, invitation-only conference call for the media. No questions allowed. She was lecturing America on healthy eating while putting down a chomp burger with French fries in the back room. That's it. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on. You got to watch the news and listen to the shows because this is beyond belief what's going on. And it's going to change. It's going to change very rapidly. So I want to go to michaelsavage.com for another quick look at the updates of what's on the website today. Obviously, we're all concerned about Egypt's future because, in a way, it's an interconnected world. There's interconnectivity in the world. And what happens there happens here. North Carolina man admits to conspiring with foreign terrorists. UK Muslim students are now being taught to chop off hands and hate Jews. Let's pause again. Islamic schools in England are reportedly teaching their students how to cut off thieves' hands and that Jews are plotting to take over the world. That's going on in the land of the Magna Carta, the land I'm not allowed to enter. Unbelievable. Rancher fighting court order to pay damages to illegals. Unbelievable. Mubarak to stay for now transfers authority to VP. We heard that. Congressman resigns after claim he sent shirtless photo to women. Woman. Michelle Obama preaches fitness and eats cheeseburgers and fries. Saudis told Obama to back Mubarak. What happens if the Muslim Brotherhood leader returns to Egypt? Well, you won't be seeing any jeans anymore. Muslim Brotherhood text reveals a scope of radical creed. It says they want to take over the world. Tell that to our director of intelligence. Obamacare support melting away around the country amongst Democrats as well. Toddlers who eat more junk food have a lower IQ. I wish they put away the cheeseburgers and the kielbasa in the White House. Maybe they would have gotten Egypt right. Have you read Obama and the Shadow Socialist Group Behind Egypt's Fall? Michael Savage wrote it. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. Woman dies after butt injection at Philly hotel. In UFC fight, mixed martial arts and brain science collide. On the bottom of my website, you'll see that Savage's radio ratings are soaring. Take a look at them on One Market in New York City on WOR. I'm bucking the trend by bucking upwards. That's it and more on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
But I stumbled on something else. I spoke with a woman who expressed to me that there are people making a lot of money as unlicensed therapists by calling themselves coaches. And there's a huge void of, there's a huge need for this, apparently, in that people aren't going so much to hear what their psychological problems are as to get advice in their life, such as what to do with a job or what to do with a relationship or what to do with regard to, anything that comes up in a human life. And they don't have anyone to turn to. They may not have a father figure. They may not have a brother they can turn to, a husband, a lover. The male figure is gone, and I'm talking from a male perspective. I'm sure there are women doing very well in this. But the male coach, the male life coach, is an interesting phenomenon. I'm going to play life coach, see how I do, and see if I give you advice worthwhile. So now make believe you're calling an 800 number, and you've paid your cost to whoever answers, whatever my fee might be. It would be very expensive, I'm sure, as much as any attorney gets, if not more. And I'm going to give you advice. I'm a life coach now, Michael Savage, life coach. So let us begin with Texas Ronald. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I've been unemployed for over about a year now. And basically, to be honest with you, I've become a recluse and have left the house in about a 15-month period about three times, one for a funeral and two other times.
You're starting to sound like a talk show host.
I see all these commercials for all these drugs that they're pushing on the TV. I just don't buy into that. And
well, I can't comment on that. I'm against such drugs. I don't think that they're very beneficial, number one. But if you're staying at home and you become totally reclusive, I joke about it. I do go out. How are you going to find gainful employment if you stay at home?
Yeah, that's true. I use the internet to, look up certain job sites and everything. But that
hasn't worked out, has it?
No, sir, it has not.
What kind of work did you do?
Structural engineer.
Oh, you're an engineer by training?
Yes, but I think it's more of a. I think I'm basically I used to go out all the time. I had a good social life. All the friends that I did have, I still have them. They think I'm still working. They think, I haven't reached out to anybody.
Okay. You're feeling ashamed. You know, it's a shame that a man with your education shouldn't be of use to a society like this instead of giving jobs to illegal aliens. It's sickening. I'm sure there's a place for you right in your own community. You just answered your own question, by the way. Just talking to me for less than 2 minutes, you answered your own question. You just said to me, you haven't even talked to your old friends who think you're working. And it's because you have pride. You don't want them to know that you're out of work. You're going to have to swallow your pride. You're going to have to take a shave, a haircut, put on some nice clothing, get together with your friends for a beer somewhere. And you're going to say, I've recently lost my job. Do you guys know of anything? Let's start networking together. I will bet you that within 3 months, you're going to wind up on your feet again.
Hey, can I ask you something else? you know, basically, I don't know why. I just become inclusive. And when I do go out, I mean, for these three times, Dr. Savage, in the last 15 months, I mean, I get these panic attacks. And I've never been like this. I used to be outgoing.
Well, it's because the whole core of your being fell out. In America, perhaps in most of the world, a man identifies with his profession, his career, his work. And when you lose that core, it's like the center of your being falls out. So you feel frightened because, you know, the core of your identity is gone, Ronald. You mean, after all, didn't you go to college?
Yes, I did.
And how many, you got a bachelor's and another degree or just a bachelor's?
Bachelor's.
In structure, in engineering?
Yes, doctor.
And the years you were working, were you an engineer?
Yes, I was.
So you're feeling embarrassed that you're no longer working as an engineer because the building trades have died off. But with your background, with your education, there's no reason that you can't go out. Now, as far as the anxiety goes, I would think that you need a little crutch to get you over this hump. I would go to a doctor. I would tell him exactly what you want to do, which is meet your friends, talk with them about networking, but you're a little afraid because you have anxiety. I would say that a crutch during this period for that anxiety is a good idea. How do you like that? In other words, there is a place for psychiatric medication in our lives. It's just knowing when to use it and know when to drop it. That's as far as I would go, Ronald. I hope I've been of some use to you. So general listeners, you're listening to the show. Don't you like the way I'm handling this? I mean, you know that what I just said made sense to that man. I would never have taken that call if I didn't think that I had something to help him with. Mississippi, Laura, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, my husband and I stay home with our two small children. We're a single income family, and we're currently swamped with medical bills due to my ulcerative colitis, and we can't decide if I should try to get a job teaching my degrees in education just to get that double coverage insurance, but it would only basically pay enough to put my two small children in daycare.
Wait a minute, hold on. If we're talking about this in terms of the quotient of the medical plan that you'd be gaining through the job, how much is that going to be worth to your family? A lot?
With the cost of my medical bills, yes, we are swamped with my medical bills right now.
Well, I think, again, you've answered your own question. Although the money you earn will only pay for child care, the medical plan that you will be getting by going to work will greatly aid your family's finances, would it not?
Yeah, it would help with my medical. I'm so worried about...
All right, so how old are your children?
Almost 3 and 14 months.
Well, 14 months is a little young to be put in child care. I think that's your real question, correct?
Yeah, definitely.
The real question is not whether you should work or not. It's whether you should leave your children or not. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. That's the big thing. We didn't have...
Well, you're at a real crossroads because nobody would recommend you leave such a small child in the hands of a child care facility. On the other hand, you're desperate. And you need the health plan that you get from a job. So I don't have a direct answer. Have you discussed it with your husband?
Well, we have health insurance for his job, but if we had two health plans, then it would, cancel.
Yes,
out a lot
of course. It would give you additional coverage, and you'd be able to get a little breathing space. Last question. Do you have anybody in your family who could watch the young child while you're working?
No.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to hazard a no guess on this one, Laura. I have no advice on this. It's too personal a question, and I'm sorry I can't help you any further. I mean, I'm not going to fire from the hip here. A young child like that, I don't think I would leave at home. But on the other hand, the poor woman needs a medical care. I almost feel like raising, money on the show. What if I turned it into like a money-raising show? God, I'd be busy, wouldn't I? How's my driving? Call 1-800-SAVAGE. No, I'm very good at this. I know it. I'm like the uncle of the nation. I know that. Everyone knows that I know what I'm talking about. They can tell by my political analysis that I'm right. And as far as life analysis, I'm giving you advice through the airwaves, okay? So where do I have the audacity to tell you that I know what would be best for you? It comes from the feeling that there's common sense in the world and there's a lack of common sense in the world. And I believe that I have been gifted with common sense. It was ingrained in me. It was taught to me. My father was a very commonsensical man. He taught me how to think for myself. And I've learned, I believe, what is, I would call, commonsensical solutions to problems, okay? So that's all I'm going to say. If you like my advice, call the number. If you don't call the number. I'm actually enjoying this. I think this is so much fun instead of talking about a hearing on Homeland Security that's nothing but fluff and a whitewash when they won't even mention the word Islamic fascism. Houston, Texas. David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Great show. Listen, I need some advice from you. I really look up to you, and I respect everything you say. 41 years old, never been married, real close, and thinking about doing it this Saturday. And I don't
know.
You know, I'm not scared to get married.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yeah, but the problem is your fiance may be listening.
No, she's at school. She just started.
All right, then we could have a secret conversation between ourselves and millions of others. Okay, how long have you known the young lady?
I've known her for probably about, maybe a year and a half or 2 years. And we've been dating and living together since last May.
All right, and do you want to have children?
Yes, I want to have children. She wants to have children.
All right, hold on. The number one reason for marriage is to build a family. In fact, it's the only reason for marriage is to build a family.
Savage.
Federal judge in Florida ruled that Obamacare is unconstitutional, as we know. We're now starting to see other pieces of this fall in place. Many, many Democrats are starting to bolt from Obamacare. Joining us now is the director of health policy studies at the Cato Institute, Michael Cannon, and he'll give us his opinion on what we're seeing here. Michael Cannon, well, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
Obviously, you see the trend, which is against Obamacare.
Well, this is really just another piece of an enormous backlash against Obamacare. This law has never been popular with the American people. The American people have been opposed to it since it was first put to paper and introduced in Congress in June of 2009. And for the following 20 months, up until today, the American people have been solidly opposed to this legislation. They want to see it repealed. And among the reasons they want to see it repealed is that its centerpiece, the individual mandate, is not only counterproductive, and not only will it increase the cost of health care and health insurance, but it is a violation of our American liberties, and it is an unconstitutional usurpation of power by Congress. And that is what the court in Florida said, as well as a court in Virginia. They ruled that there's no constitutional basis for the Congress to force Americans to purchase a government-designed, though private, health insurance plan. And so one of those courts struck down the individual mandate and said, I'll let a higher court worry about whether or not to strike down the rest of the law. And the other court said, no, I have a responsibility to make a decision here, and the entire law has to go because the individual mandate is unconstitutional.
Didn't anybody else see this coming?
I think the American people did see this coming. The American people have never believed the claims the supporters have made about this legislation. They said that if we force everyone into the pool, then that will bring health insurance premiums down. Well, you know what? They tried that in Massachusetts. They have Obamacare in Massachusetts. They've had it for a few years now. What has happened to the cost of health insurance in Massachusetts? Well, it was already higher than anywhere else in the nation, but now it's growing faster than any place else in the nation because this Obamacare strategy does not work. Sure, Mitt Romney sold RomneyCare with a lot of phony baloney promises of cost control.
Hmm.
But it turns out that the cost of health insurance under RomneyCare has risen so rapidly that now the state government is thinking about using things like price controls and exchange controls to ration care implicitly, and even using explicit means of rationing care. So the government is actually saying, no, we will not cover that. You will not get that treatment. Likewise, there are a lot of phony baloney promises about how Obamacare is going to control costs, not just the magic of the individual mandate, but also lots of pilot programs and payment system reforms that are really just the same sort of price and exchange controls that they're talking about in Massachusetts. And they've tried these at the federal level. They never work. Every time they try to do this, lobbyists come in, they defang these things, because every dollar of wasteful healthcare spending is a dollar of income to somebody, and that somebody has a lobbyist. So you're never going to reduce healthcare spending, reduce wasteful healthcare spending, until you get those decisions out of Washington, D.C. If you control your healthcare dollars, if I control my healthcare dollars, we can pick whatever health plan we want. We got a wide range of plans to choose from. We are going to go to the plans that eliminate waste because we will reap the savings. But when it's someone else's money, we don't care. And that's why government is never able to contain health care costs.
Well, what do you think went wrong?
Well, their first mistake was the idea that government should be providing universal health insurance coverage to people. As soon as the government makes that their goal, then health care and health insurance are going to get more expensive, and the quality is going to get worse. And we're not going to see the sort of innovations that make quality better. Look at the government's history of getting involved in health care. Back in during World War II is when the employment-based health insurance system exploded because the government created a huge tax break for employer-sponsored health insurance. So here was this tax break that was supposed to make health insurance more affordable, and what did it do? It shunted now 90% of the private market into employer-sponsored insurance, a kind of insurance that disappears when you get sick and can't work anymore. That's not health insurance. It's a kind of insurance where you don't even get to choose your own health insurance plan. Your employer chooses that for you. It's a kind of health insurance where your employer, they're not paying for it by reducing their profits, by taking money out of executive pay or something like that to pay for your health benefits. That $10,000 that your employer is spending on your health insurance is coming out of your paycheck. So it's a kind of health insurance that takes your money away from you, robs you of control over your earnings. So it's actually more like a government program than private health insurance.
Exactly.
And every economist agrees that this tax break for employer-sponsored insurance increases health care costs and makes it more difficult for everybody to afford coverage. Fast forward 20 years. We've got the Medicare and Medicaid programs. The market for you got about half of senior citizens that have health insurance, half are uninsured. Why? Well, remember what Congress did 20 years previously. It created a private health insurance system that says you lose your health insurance when you lose your job. And at age 65, when they stop working, that means they don't have any health insurance. So this problem of seniors without health insurance was created by the federal government. They step in with Medicare. They say, we're going to fix that. What does Medicare do? It causes health care costs to rise even more rapidly. And it locks into place a system of price and exchange controls that economists, that even Medicare advocates agree, is causing health care costs to rise. It's causing patients to get unnecessary treatments that might be harming them. That is fueling an epidemic of medical errors, where as many as 100,000 Americans die every year from preventable medical errors because Medicare punishes doctors and hospitals if they try to reduce medical errors. Medicare prevents doctors from coordinating care. It punishes them if they try to share information to provide the best care to a shared patient. It discourages the kind of comparative effectiveness research that the government now wants to spend $1 billion of your money on. And all of this happens because the federal government decided, hey, we're going to provide universal health insurance to people. We want to expand access to care. All they've done is made health care more expensive and reduce the quality. And Obamacare does the same thing. It's going to take all of those problems that the government created and make them even worse.
Well, what's next?
It remains to be seen what's the next hit that Obamacare is going to take. We've already had two courts declare part or all of the law unconstitutional. We've got Congress voting to repeal it overwhelmingly in the House, and that repeal vote just failed by a little bit in the Senate. We've got Democrats trying to repeal parts of it right now. They vote 30 or so Democrats voted to repeal the 1099 mandate in Obamacare. You've got Democrats that are running away from the individual mandate, offering alternatives to that. But really, what's the next big political hit that Obamacare is going to take? We don't know yet. It might be on abortion, because the House of Representatives is pushing to bar federal funding of abortions in Obamacare's health insurance exchanges. It could be an appropriations issue. The House Republicans are talking about defunding Obamacare. It could be another court decision. You know, there are two dozen cases challenging Obamacare in the courts right now, And some of them we haven't even heard from the federal district courts yet. Meanwhile, others are moving their way all the way up to the circuit court level. So there is really an all-out assault on this law, and that's just an indication of how ill-considered and unpopular a law this is.
What can we, the people, do?
I think it's important for all Americans to keep their eye on what's happening with Obamacare. The worst parts of this law don't take effect until 2014. So there's a tendency to say, I'll worry about it when it happens. But this law is already throwing people out of their health insurance plans. Nearly a million people lost their current source of health insurance when Obamacare forced Principal Financial Group out of the market. About 22,000 of Aetna's customers in Colorado are now going to have to find a new health insurance plan because Obamacare forced them out of this market. In 20 states, accounting for one-third of the U.S. population, you cannot find a child-only health insurance policy because of Obamacare. So if you're an unemployed parent or a parent who doesn't get dependent coverage on the job, you are out of luck trying to find health insurance for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, Obamacare is reducing dependent coverage for children. This mandate that says if you cover dependents, you have to cover them up to age 26 is pushing some people, like a union local in New York, to drop dependent coverage. That left 6,000 dependents in that one union without health insurance, so now they're uninsured. These things are hurting people right now. We need to keep our eye on them. We need to keep banging the drums about them. We need to keep educating the public about just how harmful this law is, because if it is allowed to take effect in 2014, all of this is going to be much worse. What we're seeing right now will just be a drop in the bucket. Premiums are going to rise much more rapidly. You're going to see your paychecks stagnant or maybe even falling as a result of Obamacare. And access to care for sick people is going to get worse than it is right now, because no matter what proponents of Obamacare say about preventing discrimination, insurers from discriminating against sick people, this law encourages insurance companies to avoid and mistreat and dump the sick by, you know, such things as making it hard to get their claims filed, by dropping particular benefits that sick people need desperately, the sorts of things you could rely on if you had a contract with an insurance company, but you cannot rely on under Obamacare. And it doesn't matter if you're poor or rich, you're going to be hit by these things.
What did you think of Obama's Super Bowl interview with O'Reilly?
You know, what was great about the interview that President Obama did with Bill O'Reilly before the Super Bowl was he said a lot about the health care law and almost none of it was true. He said that 12 judges have upheld the constitutionality of Obamacare. That is nonsense. There have been 14 court rulings on this law. 12 of them were dismissals on procedural grounds, which has nothing to do with whether Obamacare is constitutional or not. Two of them, yes, the judges upheld Obamacare, but in the other two, which were really the only two to fully consider the issue, they both found it unconstitutional. The president said the public opinion is evenly divided on Obamacare. Again, false. The polls have consistently shown that the American public opposes this. And the intensity is much higher on the side of Obamacare opponents.
Oh, I agree.
Next, the president said again, you know, if you have health care that you like, you can keep it. But his own top actuary, this is an employee of the president, testified before Congress last week that what the president is saying about this is, quote, not true in all cases. You've got a million or more people across this country who have already lost their health insurance because of Obamacare. The president said, I didn't raise taxes once. I lowered taxes over the last 2 years. It's amazing that he can say this with a straight face, because the president signed into law both a cigarette tax increase and Obamacare, which by itself increased taxes by $500 billion. The president even said that there's nothing socialist about Obamacare. There's nothing socialist about saying we're each going to be responsible for our own health care. But if this law were about individual responsibility rather than collectivism, it would let Americans make their own choices. If it were about individual responsibility and freedom rather than collectivism, then why would Fidel Castro have praised it as a miracle? You know, the president says the individual mandate is not a tax, and then he says that it is. He continues to say that Obamacare will reduce health care costs, even though his chief actuary testified before Congress that that's, quote, false more so than true. He keeps repeating that the law will reduce the deficit, even though the Congressional Budget Office and his own chief actuary and even the International Monetary Fund have all discredited this idea of Obamacare as deficit reducing. You know, sometimes I wonder how the president is getting away with this. But then I look at the polls, which remind me he isn't.
Thanks for the report, Michael.
Happy to do it, Michael, anytime.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, there's a lot of people in the media, in the radio business in particular, who are crossing the line. They don't know who they are. You think Obama has a shapeshifter identity crisis. I can name three or four people in talk radio who are conservatives who have a bigger identity crisis than he does. If you took away a television camera from a few of them, they would go to pieces. They need to go into a mental hospital. If they ever turned the camera off on a few of these people or wrapped themselves in the flag, they would go to pieces. It's the same with the microphone. See, I'm lucky because I started at age 50. I had many other professions before this, and believe me, I have many other avocations. I could collect plants. There's things I could do with my life if I left radio, or if radio left me, or if the government turned off the mic, so to speak. But you can't say that about people with the flag that wrap themselves in the flag. You turn the camera off the hem, I guarantee the hem's in a nut house within 6 months. You turn the camera off Walby is in a nut house in 4 months. You turn the camera off corned beef, finished, over. They don't have lives, these people, in my estimation. But I do. I mean, I frankly do. Now, I'm getting to another point here. The point is this. The point is the fact that there are other lives other than the media. And I understand that. But here's the big problem. Many people in the conservative media, or the conservative side, if you want to call them that, and some do a good job. I don't know how much they believe in it. It's their business. I'm not here to second guess what a man believes in or doesn't believe in. Many of them have made the mistake of starting to think that they're Paul Revere or George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, and they want to be a congressman, or they get late at night and they can't sleep. They're jagged up from the TV, the camera. The makeup is causing an allergic reaction, and the wife doesn't want to be with them because they smell from the makeup or the hairdryer. So they lay awake and they think they're going to be a politician. They start imagining themselves another guy, like the guy from Minnesota. I forget his name, the fat slob who failed on Air America, whatever his name is, the slob senator. Yeah, I know his name. The slob senator who no one ever heard of. He made a big, big splash, and now the slob sank to the bottom of the pool. No one hears from him anymore. But many of them want to be a senator, Senator Wallbanger. They dream waking up. And Senator Wallbanger, what do you have to say? And Senator Corned Beef, what is it you have? Or Senator whatever. So they're crossing the line. And it reminds me of a character. I got to tell you the character. Do you remember the movie with Al Pacino, one of my favorite actors? I don't care what his politics are. I really don't care. Very talented, very convincing actor. Do you remember the movie where he plays the guy who comes out of jail and Swine Penn plays the kinky-haired lawyer? I know Carlito's Way. I'm trying to get the audience, Phil, to think out loud. Carlito's Way, a great movie. So there's a kinky-haired lawyer played by Swine Penn, who apparently was modeled so closely on a certain Harvard professor that the Harvard professor actually sued Swine Penn. I think the Harvard professor lost because it was so close to the sleazoid. Anyway, that lawyer character, the sleazy lawyer, opposite, who played by Swine Penn, opposite Al Pacino in Carlito's Way. So Carlito's Way is about, he's a Puerto Rican character, was a heroin dealer, a big one, comes out of prison, and he wants to go straight. Tries to do it straight. And he ties up with the lawyer. He likes the kinky-haired lawyer because the guy got him out of jail or whatever. And there's a scene where the lawyer pulls out a gun on an Italian in a nightclub over a woman. He pulls out a .32 handgun. And then Carlito, the character, pulls him on the side and says, "You crossed the line, man. You a lawyer," he says to him. "You're not a gangster. You a lawyer." Don't you remember that scene? And that reminds me of a few people in conservative talk radio who have crossed the line in their own mind. They don't understand that they're just talk show hosts. They're not politicians. They're not senators. They're not congressmen. They're not going to be president. They're only talk show hosts, good, bad, or indifferent, and they've crossed the line. But one thing with me, because I know who I am, because I'm a little older and I've been around and I have had other careers, I absolutely know who I am. It's not all great. I have a lot of warts. Believe me, I have a lot of warts. I know exactly who I am. I know exactly what I'm capable of, what I'm not capable of. And I'm not capable or nor do I desire ever to be a politician or a community activist or a community organizer or lead a riot in front of a city hall with a bullhorn. And a lot of people in talk radio don't know that. And so they become the Zelligs of our time. You got people who once were hidden in closets somewhere with computers who are now running around with bullhorns, breaking into offices, stealing files. They don't even know what they're doing. They have no idea which side of the law they're on anymore. And they've lost all conceptualization of what they're doing. They think because they have self-righteousness, they're not breaking the law, even though they are breaking law in some cases. And this is a very dangerous game for some of these people to be playing. I've told some of them that in subtle and unsubtle ways, but they don't listen to me or to anybody else. Savage. They're like children.